Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Prophet Without Honor by Joseph Vertenbaugh, narrated by Eric Jason Martin. Author's Note: A Prophet Without Honor is a work of what might be called alternative historical fiction, a speculation on the different direction history might have taken had certain events in 1936 turned out differently. There is no fixed line of demarcation. The storyline is continuous. The actual and the conjectured are blended into one seamless narrative, a chronicle of a history that never came to be. But generally, events occurring before 1936 are described realistically, subject to the conventions of most historical fiction. The conjectural elements are indicated in the historical note that follows. Similarly, while most of the characters are clearly fictional, the careers of a few notable historical figures have been significantly reimagined. For example, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Senator Eisenhower, Major General Kurt von Ecord Hammerstein, and some others. In these instances, the changes in the course of history would have materially changed the direction of their lives. Finally, all of the various works and memoirs cited throughout the text are fictional. They are all written in a world that never came to be. Epistles from a land no one will ever visit. Historical note: in March of 1936, Adolf Hitler undertook the first overt military aggression of the Third Reich, ordering the German army to reoccupy and remilitarize the Rhineland, the western part of Germany. The reoccupation was in breach of both the Versailles and Locarno treaties, which had defined the area as a demilitarized zone, one in which no troops were to be stationed. It was a daring undertaking. The general staff of the German army, the Wehrmacht, was strongly opposed to the operation. At that time, the rearmament of Germany had barely begun. The German military was still enfeebled. It could easily have been routed by even a small contingent of French or British forces. For that reason, the Wehrmacht insisted on precautionary orders to the troops to retreat immediately back to the frontier of the demilitarized zone at the least sign of opposition from the Western powers. But the British and French did not know of this order. So no opposition occurred, and no retreat. The military venture was a complete triumph. Hitler went on to one spectacular diplomatic success after another in the latter half of the 30s, and from there on to the catastrophe that engulfed the entire world. At the time, the Rhineland reoccupation seemed only one more incident in the ceaseless ebb and flow of European national politics. Only in retrospect did it become apparent that the West missed its best, possibly its only, opportunity to halt the Nazi momentum without significant human cost. Contemporary historians now view the remilitarization of the Rhineland as one of the great watersheds of 20th century history. If the Allies had met the Nazi bluff with the slightest show of force, the balloon of Nazi pretension and the man of destiny would have been punctured, perhaps decisively, and with negligible bloodshed, perhaps none at all. Thus the small cause, thus the large effect, a breath of wind, or not, and the hurricane is born, or not. If the British and French had only known of the orders to retreat, that they could have opposed the German force with complete safety, but they did not know, so they did nothing, and the main chance was lost. If they had only known of the order, everything would be different. Preludes. Excerpt from A History of Europe in the 20th Century, Giacomo Benedetti, Houghton Mifflin, 1957. Can the course of history be changed by the actions of a single individual? To ask the question is to answer it. Of course not. Heroes and villains are for children's fables, not scientific historians. If we are to do history seriously, we must do away with all such romantic delusions. The controversy that surrounds the role of Leutnant Karl von Heidenreich with respect to the Rhineland affair and the Wehrmacht putsch of 1936 is thus completely misplaced. The force of history is what doomed Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich. Had his demise not been caused by this group of men, it would have been another soon enough. Excerpt from A History of Germany in the 20th Century, Josef Behrens, Alfred A. Knopf, 1964. Everyone knows that the National Socialist regime, the so-called Third Reich, collapsed with dramatic speed in March of 1936. In short order, the Rhineland affair led to the Wehrmacht putsch of 1936. But how? And why? And who? It is in this context that the arguments concerning Karl von Heidenreich begin. Excerpt from Destiny Betrayed, A Chronicle of Treason, Harold Quandt, Franz Ihr Nachfolger, GmbH, 1952. Karl von Heidenreich was the most monstrous traitor in German history. All alone, he brought about the collapse of the Third Reich. On that sad day, the German nation lost its last, best chance for glory. Excerpt from Memoirs, The Right Honorable Eric Phipps, Houghton Mifflin, 1946. It is impossible for anyone who experienced the change in mood in Berlin in March 1936 to believe that event was a tragedy for anyone. Excerpt from My Name is Ike, Reflections on 50 Years of Service as Soldier and Statesman, Senator Dwight D. Eisenhower, Random House, 1986. Karl was my godson. I have mourned him all the days of my life. Those 3 weeks in March 1936 might have been the making of me as a public man, but sometimes I wish to God they had never happened. Excerpt from Service to the State in War and Peace, Major General Werner von Blomberg, Reichswehr Press, 1949. I have no personal knowledge of the guilt or innocence of Karl von Heidenreich, despite the continual assertions to the contrary by my enemies. Was he a traitor or not? It is hard to believe he could have played so central a part of these events without some deliberate choice. Excerpt from A 20th Century Life, Albert Somerville, Houghton Mifflin, 1959. Karl von Heidenreich was the best friend I ever had in my life, from our school days in Uppingham. True, he had an unaccountable sympathy for the Yid, an absurdly blind eye to the cunning and malice of that race, but he would never have behaved dishonorably to anyone on any matter, large or small. Of this I am certain. Excerpt from Interview, Adolf Breslau, Der Spiegel, March 31st, 1961. Karl von Heidenreich, the savior of Germany? The savior of German Jews? The von Heidenreich family was the most profoundly anti-Semitic family in all Bavaria. Karl himself gave financial support to the Nazis throughout his life. His father was the ruin of my aunt Rosamunde. The son's actions resulted in the torture and murder of my father. I pray to God we be saved from any more saviors of that kind. Excerpt from Interview, Kurt Weill, New York Herald, June 4th, 1949. I don't know anything about what sort of soldier Karl became or what took place at the Chancellery. I only knew him at the Hochschule. But God, how he could play the saxophone! He was born to that instrument. He should have stuck to it. Excerpt from A 20th Century Life, Albert Somerville, Houghton Mifflin, 1959. I am often asked about Karl's widow, what she knows and what she might have said to me. Elizabeth Whittingham and I are bound together by mutual admiration and a profound mutual grief. Our political differences are trifling in comparison. Our barbed exchanges in Parliament are as often as not the prelude to the sharing of a glass of wine, or a convivial dinner with her family and whomever I am married to at the time. But she has never discussed March 1936 with me. She never will, with me or anyone. Historians must look elsewhere. Excerpt from Preface. My name is Ike. Reflections on 50 years of service as soldier and statesman, Senator Dwight D. Eisenhower, Random House, 1986. These memoirs will be published on March 31, 1986, the 50th anniversary of the date of the Wehrmacht Putsch. I regretted frustrating all my contemporaries, but about Karl and all that happened, I could only speak comfortably from beyond the grave. With luck, enough time has passed that the uproar has subsided. Even now, I would have preferred silence, but history must be served. If all has gone according to plan, my friend Kurt von Hammerstein's memoirs will appear this same day, as well as the publication of Karl's journals. Excerpt from Preface. A General Speaks, the Autobiography of Kurt von Hammerstein Equord. Major General Kurt von Hammerstein Equord, Reichswehr Press, 1986. By agreement with Senator Eisenhower and Mrs. Whittingham, these memoirs of mine will appear posthumously on March 31, 1986, the 50th anniversary of the date of the Wehrmacht Putsch. Like Senator Eisenhower, I too would have preferred silence. Excerpt from Preface, The Journals of Karl von Heidenreich, 1922-1936, Alfred A. Knopf, 1986. The long-awaited publication of the journals of Karl von Heidenreich, kept between 1922 and 1936, will finally occur on March 31, 1986, the same day as the publication of the memoirs of Senator Dwight D. Eisenhower and Major General Kurt von Hammerstein Equord. This extraordinary triple event reflects an agreement made by the principals nearly 40 years ago, in January of 1947. The publishers express their gratitude to the author's widow, the Right Honorable Elizabeth Whittingham, MP, QC, for making the material available. Mrs. Whittingham has provided no comment on the contents and wishes to make it known that she will not respond to any inquiries, either professional or personal, concerning those same contents or any of the events of March 1936. Excerpt from My Name is Ike, Reflections on 50 Years of Service as Soldier and Statesman, Senator Dwight D. Eisenhower, Random House, 1986. To understand anything about Karl, you must understand his relation to his stepmother. He admired his father, but he adored his stepmother. Excerpt from Destiny Betrayed, A Chronicle of Treason, Harold Kvant, Franz Ihr Nachfolger, GmbH, 1952. It is only necessary to add that he was corrupted by his stepmother from an early age. Excerpt from A 20th Century Life, Albert Somerville, Houghton Mifflin, 1959. There is no question that his character, his beliefs, his values, were shaped largely by his stepmother. This may not have been altogether to the good. She was, after all, a Yid. Excerpt from A General Speaks, the Autobiography of Kurt von Hammerstein Equord, Major General Kurt von Hammerstein Equord, Reichswehr Press, 1986. Leutnant von Heidenreich very rarely spoke of his parentage, but when he did, it was always with respect for his father, unlimited affection for his stepmother. Mummy. Excerpt from A History of Germany in the 20th Century, Josef Behrens, Alfred A. Knopf, 1964. Between 1880 and 1914, the late summer was a busy time for that vast military machine known as the German Army. It was then that what were known as the Kaiser maneuvers took place, vast field exercises in various open fields in Germany, beginning in late July with brigade and division maneuvers, and working up to full field corps by September. These had a serious military purpose, but were conducted in a deliberately light spirit. Military bands performed music for German villages that was not otherwise available to them. Many older men recalled their first experiences with the maneuvers, at ages 16 and 17, as their first adventures away from home. Something of a lark, the way boys from other nations went to summer camp. Senior officers and others, of course, could expect to be away from their homes for extended periods during the maneuvers, no matter how pressing personal commitments might be. 1910. September 1st, 1910. Neustrelitz am Schliersee, Bavarian Alps. Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. Captain, stop. Lottie began labor tonight. Stop. Have summoned Dr. Fiedler. Stop. Birth imminent. Stop. Fräulein Rosamunde Breslau. September 2nd, 1910. Neustrelitz am Schliersee, Bavarian Alps. Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. My dear Captain, it is with the greatest pleasure I write to inform you of the birth yesternight of your first son, to be christened, as I am informed, Werner Karl Merz von Heidenreich. The labor of Frau von Heidenreich began unexpectedly on the morning of September 1st. I was summoned to the castle during dinner and came as quickly as I could, arriving at about 8 p.m. Labor was already far advanced and proceeded in the normal manner until shortly after midnight, when she was delivered of a healthy baby boy. Mother and son are both doing well. There was perhaps more blood loss than I would have liked, but I am confident in her full recovery. Again, my congratulations. Sincerely, Dr. Leonard Fiedler. September 2nd, 1910. Neustrelitz am Schliersee, Bavarian Alps. Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. Captain von Heidenreich, stop. Come at once, stop. Charlotta in terrible danger, stop. Pay no attention to Fiedler, stop. Come home, please, stop. Rosamunde, Breslau. September 4th, 1910. Neustrelitz am Schliersee, Bavarian Alps. Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. My dear Captain von Heidenreich, forgive the tears that stain this page, but I can't stop weeping like a child. I would rather choke to death on these words than put them on paper. Your beautiful wife, my best of all friends, Lottie, is dead. Dead! She died early this morning of blood loss and other complications. Fiedler has given reasons, but I don't trust his explanations. What matters is that your wonderful wife and my lovely friend is gone forever. I am doing my best to provide comfort to poor little Magdalena, such a wonderful little girl, but she doesn't understand what has happened to her mother. How could she? What does one say to a three-year-old? Only yesterday she was so radiant with joy at the birth of her baby brother. Oh, your son is fine and doing well. I should have begun with that. I have sent for a vet nurse from the village. And now I find myself overwhelmed again. Tears smear the ink. Forgive me, Captain von Heidenreich. I have made a fine mess of this letter, but it would be useless to begin again, as the same thing would happen. I will write when I have regained my composure. I am so very, very devastated. God have mercy. Sincerely, Fräulein Rosamunde Breslau. September 5th, 1910. Neustrelitz M. Schliersee, Bavarian Alps, Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. Dear Captain von Heidenreich, once again I must implore your forgiveness for assuming an unpardonable familiarity with you, but I don't understand why I haven't heard from you. Surely messages of this importance must be delivered even during maneuvers. Something must have gone terribly wrong. I hope no misfortune has befallen you. In any case, someone must inform you of these awful events. I wish it were anyone but me. I think it best to continue as if you had received my telegrams and letters. I am myself today, and I think capable of acquainting you with all the details of this nightmare. I still pray I will awake and find it was only that, only a horrible dream. I arrived on the 24th, as we had planned. Lottie looked wonderful. I thought at first that the plan of having her confinement take place at the family estate had worked to perfection. She glowed with health and energy. She was so happy. She was certain she was going to present you with a son. We spent a few happy days together and made plans to fill the time before and after the birth. Lottie looked forward to you and me renewing our old acquaintance and once again becoming friends. On Thursday, during the afternoon, Lottie suddenly began to experience spasms. These were of the most painful and intense kind. We did not know what to make of this, because her time was not due for nearly 3 weeks. I became extremely concerned. She was in such distress, even agony. When these continued past dinner, we sent for Dr. Fiedler. He did not arrive until nearly 10. He was in the company of a midwife, a Frau Achterkirchen. By that time, Lottie was in the full throes of what even I could see was true labor. I know this to be extremely painful, but that is woman's lot. Still, it seemed to me that there was far more distress than I thought was normal. Fiedler seemed kindly enough and well-intentioned, but very much a country doctor. Frau Achterkirchen seemed no more than competent. I wished then that Lottie had gone to Munich. But it seemed to go well enough, and so quickly. I thought at the time this was a godsend. Your son Karl emerged into the world at about 12:20 a.m., praise all. Truth be told, he came on his own accord, without my assistance, or Dr. Fiedler's, or barely his mother's, for he was obviously a strong, healthy boy, with an appetite to live. He is doing quite well, and the only sunshine in this whole world of night. Of course, he does not know yet, he will never know his wonder of a mother. And now I have succeeded in undoing myself again. I am resuming, a little while later, with my tears dried, and will try not to make a fool of myself again. It was at the moment of rejoicing at Karl's birth, when all seemed best, that all became worst. There was too much bleeding, I was sure of it. I was also certain that the afterbirth had not been completely discharged. Fiedler disagreed with me, though it seemed to me he was uneasy. He and the midwife stopped the bleeding with a combination of hot and cold compresses, and said all was well. Lottie had fallen asleep, but not the sound sleep of a happy mother. Something deeper and more ominous. I could not make Fiedler and his helper understand. They kept saying this was normal, when I knew it was not. But then they left. I made up my bed in my best friend's room, determined to be with her when she awoke. But, oh, Captain, she never did. At least, not entirely. She continued in that troubled unsleep all the night and the next day. We sent for Fiedler, but he did not come. That was when I sent the telegram, for I knew then something was terribly wrong. But we waited and prayed and hoped her own strong constitution would see her through safely. I stayed with her the whole long day, hoping and praying. I barely took my eyes off her. But that evening, about 8 o'clock, I looked over and was horrified to see her bed sopping with blood. Something must have given way within her womb. I screamed for Frau Schallert, who came running with the nearest housemaid. We did what we could, but with the amount of blood and her feebleness, we worked without hope. At the last moment, Lottie seemed to wake. For a moment, she was herself. She smiled at me. Oh, God, this is an unendurable memory. Then she squeezed my hand. I am certain she was thinking of you, Captain, though I could not tell you why. But she was too weak to say anything. A moment later, she was with God, and my heart was breaking. I must stop again. Fiedler came later that night. He looked as guilty and ashamed as he should, for we found the remains of the afterbirth in Lottie's bed, so I was right all along. But I was too exhausted and devastated to remonstrate with him. He said he would write to your father, but did not mention you. From what Lottie told me, that sounds typical. So, I console myself by consoling your daughter, Magdalena, who now has a child's awareness of what has happened. She sits in my lap by the hour, and I distract her with stories, and thus distract myself. I try to keep from weeping. Meanwhile, there cannot be a sweeter baby than your new son, Carl, a little angel, and now with an angel for a mother. I'm sure she watches over him. There I go again. I don't understand why you have not come or even answered. You must not have received my letters and telegrams, but how can that be? Sincerely, Fräulein Rosamunde Breslau. P.S. I have reread this letter and hardly recognize the woman who wrote it. Had we resumed our friendship under the circumstances we originally planned, I hope you would have encountered a woman with a certain poise and delicacy of manner, instead of the giddy girl you remembered. But I am... There I go. As if my vanity mattered. At such a desolate time. I would start again, but this is the fourth try. Every time my foolish heart fails me. Please return home quickly. R.
September 7th, 1910. Kaiser maneuvers. Field near Berlin. Captain Heinrich Werner Merz von Heidenreich, 1st Royal Field Artillery Brigade, 1st Royal Bavarian Division, 1st Royal Bavarian Corps, at Kaiser Maneuvers, near a field near Berlin. My esteemed Captain, enclosed in the attached dispatch bag find A, a telegram and letter from Dr. Leonard Fiedler, and B, two telegrams and two letters from a Fräulein Rosamunde Breslau. I have learned this day that this correspondence was withheld from you at the direction of your father, under his authority as unit commander. I have forwarded them to you with all possible dispatch. You are granted leave from the Kaiser maneuvers, effective immediately, to attend to these family matters. My staff and I express our sincere and utmost sympathy for your loss. Divisional flags will be flown at half-mast for the next 3 weeks. My heartfelt condolences, Ruprecht Maria Luitpold Ferdinand, Commander, Royal Bavarian Army, added by hand. P.S. Heinz, the behavior of your father is inexcusable. My sincerest condolences, Ruprecht.
September 7th, 1910. Kaiser maneuvers, field near Berlin. Fräulein Breslau, stop. Just received communications delayed in transit, stop. Am proceeding at once to Schliersee, stop. Expect to arrive by the 9th, stop. Eternal thanks for what you have done, stop. Heinrich von Heidenreich. September 7th, 1910. Kaiser maneuvers, field near Berlin. Captain Heinz Heidenreich. Neustrelitz am Schliersee. Little brother, I'd like to begin this letter with one of those expressions of epigrammatic wit for which I am so renowned. Some would say notorious,
But I am too devastated to think of any epigrams worthy of my reputation. In a different situation, the knowledge that I am no longer burdened with the duty of producing an heir to the House of Heidenreich would be cause for shouts to the highest heaven. But, Heinz, the loss of Charlotta causes me too much anguish to think of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?